Today on Real Growth Podcast, we're meeting with a very special guest, Mr. Chris Sikkema from the Episcopal Church. We're going to learn what exactly he does, his journey on how he got there, and some really great divine moments that I hope you all listen to and can take away from. Thanks for joining us. Okay, well, welcome everybody to a new episode of Real Growth Podcast. I'll be your host today. I'm Nick Pompain, and we have a very special guest today, a friend of mine that I've actually been looking forward to this for quite a while. Everybody, welcome Chris Sikkema. Woo! What's up, Chris?
Hey, Nick. How's it going? I've been looking forward to this, too. Things are going well. It's on a seasonable, feels like 75 degrees out in February. So, I'm pretty happy all of a sudden.
Yeah, me too. For those that don't know, we're in Rochester, Minnesota, and it usually gets pretty cold, especially in February. It's usually quite brutal. But it's been unseasonably warm, which, I'll be honest, I love it.
I do too. You know, I'm given to complaining no matter what the situation is. That's like my inner Minnesotan talking. So, you know, I'm annoyed that there's not 4 feet of snow and it's not negative 10 degrees. But I'm really not. That's a huge lie. Like, if I could have this weather all winter long, I would take it every time.
No, I would too. And like, sometimes I think, oh man, am I just like a really bad Minnesotan? And then I'm like, no, you know what? I'm really not, because I don't do anything in the snow. I don't ski. I don't skate. I don't snowboard. I don't snowmobile, ice fish, nothing. So I am kind of a bad Minnesotan, but yeah. Like the reality of things is I would rather not have snow.
Me too. The extent of my winter sports activity, I like cross-country skiing for about 15 minutes. you know, the second that it's actually downhill, yeah. I fall flat. I bought snowshoes a couple of years ago, and again, a year with no snow. So I was basically just clomping on pavement at Quarry Hill, and it was pathetic. I would much rather, I'm happy to sit with a beer in the cold. That I really enjoy.
But yeah. You know, maybe what? Some cribbage. You know.
Oh, yes. There we now go. You are perfect. Talking. Okay. Now you're talking. Cool. Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, I've been looking forward to this because we've actually been talking about this for quite a while. I'm getting you on this podcast because this is like really, truly a first for us because I think you have an interesting story and I also find it very fascinating with who you work on behalf of. Okay. And it's just a lot different.
It's different.
Than what we've had in the past. So I'm super excited. So I guess the way I like to do this, Chris, is just banter back and forth and you ask me questions, I'll ask you questions. We'll just go from there. But I guess the first thing that we should do is we should get to know Chris Sikkema.
All right.
Who is Chris?
Oh man, that's a big question. It really is. And I'm a fairly boring person, but I happen to find myself in kind of like interesting situations. I have this conversation with people all the time. They're like, oh, life is so exciting. I'm like, not really. Like, but yeah, the people around me are always very interesting. Case in point here. I'm Chris Sikkema. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I am a townie. I never thought I would be one. And then the siren song called me back here. But yeah, we
like
are.
Most of us. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? I am not ashamed of that. I think it's the greatest place on earth. Exactly. So, I'll do the really quick spiel here. I left Rochester in 2005, went to Hope College in Western Michigan. My dad's whole side of the family is from there, and many of them went to Hope, small liberal arts school. Fairly evangelical, fairly conservative, which, you know, it's fine, whatever. Not my religious story necessarily, but hey, you meet all kinds of different people. Came back here very briefly after graduation and then went to Vanderbilt Divinity School down in Nashville and studied American religious history. That has been a really expensive hobby. I was like, oh,
history
man.
History kind of is, oh, right?
Absolutely.
I was a history
yeah,
major.
That's right.
It's like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like, okay. I could have just bought a bunch of books, but I was never going to do that. Never. It makes you really fun at parties because everyone has like a really strong opinion on religion and history. So it's great. And America, people love those topics. But yeah, so I studied that. I got a master's down there. It was awesome. It was the exact opposite situation where like now it was like people much further to the left of me studying the same kinds of things. And so you just really get to know people with very interesting and disparate backgrounds. You think, oh my God, I didn't grow up with this or that. And now I'm like trying to negotiate it. Then came back here for another year, and then I moved to New York. I took a job with the Episcopal Church. It's the denomination I was raised in. Love it. So I work on behalf of the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in the communications office. I've bounced around a bit in that office and at that job. But yeah, we're based on Second Avenue in New York. And about, oh God, seven, 6 years ago, they said, you can go remote if you want. And I finally found my way back to Rochester. Thought I would move to Minneapolis, ended up on the road all the time. And I said, no, I think this will be just fine.
That's awesome. So that's like a really quick, so we'll get into kind of the nitty gritty more, yeah. But you know, I've known Chris for a while now, quite a while. We went to high school together, go Spartans. and that's where I really met Chris and got to know him. We were on the homecoming court together too. You know, we were kind of cool.
And we've only gotten better since then.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and yeah. You know, now we share beers and coffee and you know, it's just great. So, like I said, I've always found this very interesting and how you got to where you got. So, Chris, when you went to Hope College, like, I guess what was your idea of what you thought you were going to do?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's really fascinating because everybody that I talk to on this, when I do this, I like to understand like, oh yeah, what were you thinking of doing when you went to college? And it usually ends up being nothing to what they're doing today.
That is entirely accurate. I really wanted to be a teacher. I thought I was going to do English education because starting with American Studies in high school, a very, very interesting class where you tied together history and literature, I thought this is an amazing lens through which to understand American history and literature at the same American literature at the same time. And so I made it all of half a semester and thought, oh my God, I don't want to do this. First of all, I don't have any of the natural talent to do that or patience. I cannot stand doing the same thing regularly, which is not a slam against teachers at all. They are so gifted and I do not have those gifts. I went instead and I was like, I'm going to be an international relations major, which I very briefly did. And then I took a religion class. You know, I've always been fairly religious, but I really, really took to American religious history. Just American history is fascinating to me. And so I thought I'm going to be an American religious histories professor. No, didn't do that either.
Hey, yeah, that's all right. I mean, my story in college is like super similar to that where I thought I was going to be a doctor, like a lot of kids in Rochester,
of course.
Minnesota. And mine lasted a half a semester, you know, and it's just like, oh, I can't do this. There's no way I can do this. So that ended quickly. And, you know, then I was then political science and then it was, oh, but I really love history. And yeah, you know, it's just, I think that was the advantage of going to a liberal arts college.
Absolutely.
I literally do love the liberal arts education because it's a broad focus on many different disciplines. And I'm forever grateful. I went to a small college just like Chris. I stayed in Minnesota, not too far away from Rochester, about 45 minutes away. But so having that and having that being exposed to all the different disciplines, I felt was very helpful for me. But once again, then I thought I was going to be a lawyer, and I'm not doing either. It's just like, what the heck?
Yeah, there's hope for people who have no clue.
Hey, that's all right, because we find our way, right?
Absolutely.
So here we go, next stage. Okay, so now we're what, probably 2009, and you're graduating from Hope College.
Yep.
What happened next then?
Oh, God. So I was also a poli-sci major, a double major, yeah. Poli-sci and religion, and I studied for a semester in DC, which is actually where I interned with the Episcopal Church originally. Okay. And I don't know what I wanted to do, but it was the bottom of the recession and I thought, I got to find a way.
Time in history.
Oh, terrible. If you wanted to find a job, good luck. Yeah. So I was like, I have to go to grad school cause I got to defer these loans. I will sing the praises of liberal arts schools till the day I die, but good God, the price tag was not nothing.
I agree.
Worth it in the end for sure. But, so I got into Georgetown Public Policy and I was going to go there and I went and with one of my classmates from Hope found an apartment out there and the whole time I was like, I don't want this. This is not something I want. I definitely don't want to add $100,000 to my debt. And 2 weeks before I was supposed to move to DC, I said, there's something that is just not right here and I got to defer for a year and figure this out.
Yeah.
But it is not worth it to spend that kind of money for something you really like start to feel you don't want. So I ended up working in the Rochester Public Schools as a paraprofessional at old elementary school. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was great.
I guess
great.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Ben Franklin Elementary. Go Flyers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. So then, Chris, like, with that you said you had an internship with the Episcopal Church first. So is that basically then how you landed where you currently are? Because you had those connections.
It was. Yep.
Okay.
It took some time of basically saying, I'm not going to go get a PhD. First of all, because I'm not smart enough. Second of all, because I can't focus that long. And I called up my old boss and said, hey, whatever you have, I will move wherever. I've got nothing holding me here. So let me know. And he said, "What if you want to move to New York, you can take this job." I said, sure.
So what year would have that been then for New York?
That must have been 2014.
2014.
Yeah, so 10 years ago.
So 2014, Chris Sikkema from Rochester, Minnesota, went to Hope College. Now he is going to, well, you went to Vanderbilt
in between there. Yep.
And now you're heading to New York City.
New York City.
Big city. That's the big apple.
That's what we all call it.
And, okay, let's just talk about that experience a little bit.
Please.
Because I outside of going with my wife for, I don't know, back and forth for 16 months to Boston, which is way more doable, in my opinion, than New York City. I have no idea what a big city life is, especially in New York, the city that doesn't sleep.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. And how did you have an identity? Like, that's something I'm super interested in with, you know, how many people live there. How did you have the, hey, I'm Chris Sikkema.
Yeah.
You know, I have an identity too.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I guess part of the joy of New York is that you can release that if you want. Like, but it's, there are so many people that you kind of can just blend into the crowd.
Yeah.
Which is nice sometimes.
Sure.
I don't recommend it as like a whole life thing, but you find people. I was part of a congregation and, you know, being like a religious late 20 something is like not a huge demographic in New York. And then you find other Minnesotans around. You have people to talk to. A couple times I walked out of my office and ran into other classmates of ours from high school.
Crazy.
It was just wild. I mean, even a place that big, but otherwise, you know, you get into a kind of, a routine.
Yeah.
A routine. Sure. Yeah. You get into a routine. And so like I lived in Queens in a little neighborhood, that had my grocery store. It had my laundromat, the little cafe, a couple pizza places. Like it felt like a small town most days. And then you just commute into the city, and you'd walk the same block. You'd end up being on the train with the same people. The same panhandler singing, Elvis songs, Elvis song, really one song every day for 3 years. But yeah, it's great because you can just blend in if you want, but otherwise you just find your small community and you just kind of stick with them.
No, that's cool. And I think that's a great part of anywhere you go.
Sure.
Right. And I think that's something that, I know I've always been a little bit more timid and afraid of. Oh my gosh, like how would I find a group of people? But it's like anything, right? It's like,
sure.
Like when you go to college, like I had those same feelings and it's just like, no, you find your people. So,
exactly. And it takes a while sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, you find them. Yeah.
Right. But you find them. So now let's kind of get into the Episcopal Church.
Yeah.
So you're a religious historian, which is really cool. I like I said, I love history. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, please.
Just briefly on you know, the Episcopal Church, what happened, how did it become the Episcopal Church? And then I would also really like to know, what exactly do you do?
That's a great question.
So cool. Let's start with kind of a brief history of the church so everybody out there knows, like, oh, okay, I get it.
You know, not enough people ask that about the Episcopal Church, and I'm so happy to share. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's a very interesting institution. So it's at its root, it's descended from the Church of England.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, currently you can kind of trace that in countries that England colonized or had a large part in. The Anglican Church is what, you know, they call that, or the Church of England. The Anglican Church, really, though, it has a presence in all those countries. And in the United States, where you see it most, is along the eastern seaboard, and specifically the southeast. So Virginia and
the 13
New
colonies,
York.
Right?
Exactly. Yep. Those great institutions. Yeah, yeah. So I'm not trying not to get too deep into the weeds here, but one of the very interesting things about the Church of England is that you may remember Henry VIII. We get the bad rap of like, oh, he wanted a divorce, and that's
how
he
killed all his wives.
He killed
a few of them.
Divorce, beheaded, died. Divorce, beheaded, survived. So he killed two of them.
But he's pretty famous. You know, he's got a show. He's got a musical.
Henry VIII has all those.
Yeah, he's
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it's,
who knew?
Yeah,
I'm not very clued into the culture. Yeah, I live in the 17th century most days. he broke off the what was then the Catholic Church in England and became, you know, his own little thing. And that's way oversimplifying it, but it's spread around the world. When and part of his whole deal was when a priest is ordained, or when you're confirmed, whatever, when a priest is ordained, mainly you have to swear allegiance to the king or to the sovereign. Yeah, because he's the head of the Church of England. Yeah.
So does that still happen today?
I guess I don't know in the Church of England. I should know that. Okay. But it was a big breaking point after the American Revolution where they're like, well, we can't, like, if we're going to survive in this country, we're going to have to make our own institution.
Correct. Makes sense. Yep.
Of course. Oh, sorry. I know this is like potentially boring, but in order to make bishops, you have to have three other bishops lay hands on someone. So that's like, it's true in the Catholic Church. It's true in the Episcopal Church. But that if a bishop wouldn't swear loyalty to the king, well, you can't make a bishop. He didn't say the right words. So sorry, like good luck. So we had to call people from Scotland over to start ordaining them. It was just a huge mess. So we took that part of the vows out. We remain now in good relationship with Church of England, Church of Scotland, all of these other institutions. But yeah, what it looks like on the ground, it can depend a little bit about where you're located in the country, but it looks very Catholic and very Lutheran, but it's, I don't know, people say Catholic light. We tend to take a more progressive stance on social issues than either of those institutions. But the worship is very dignified in my experience. It's very staid. In the 1800s, we were very proud because like every rich person in America was Episcopalian. Everyone, like my pension is funded by an original gift from J.P. Morgan.
I mean,
that money's long gone. Don't worry. But like, yeah, he's the one who started like all of that for all the lay employees of the church. But it's a very storied history. And that's if you like history, you can. I mean, my church here, you walk through. It's very not plain, but it's very simple. It's a very small building. But you look at the windows, and it's like given by, you know, Mrs. Edith Mayo, Graham, Plummer, all these people, these names are like on there. And if you're from here, that it means something.
Yep. It is kind of like the who's who.
You're going back
in time and you're like, whoa. Like, so it is pretty cool. If people out there haven't yet, just go in there, take a look.
Yeah. Calvary Episcopal across from the Mayo.
It's really cool. It's an amazing place that I think the Mayo brothers helped
fund. They funded it. It existed before they got here. They were.
So it's a really cool place. Mm-hmm. So okay. Well, thank you. I love history. I was really hoping that you would actually give a little bit of that.
There's hours more where that came from. Don't worry.
Well, perfect. Well, we'll have a cup of coffee, a red eye or something. Well, I won't have a red eye. I'll have a mocha, but I'll get you a red eye and we can talk more about that.
Thank you.
So what, Chris, does your day to day life look like when you're working? Because, like I said, this is completely different than anything that we've ever had here. I'm really, it's a nonprofit, right? Like, I'm really interested in hearing this.
So I work for what is effectively like the federal government of the Episcopal Church, which is like, so, you know, I have a congregation here that I go to, but I contract with them occasionally, but I work for what is effectively the president of the Episcopal Church, the presiding bishop, Michael Curry. And so I serve in the communications role. I work with 110 dioceses of the Episcopal Church. I work with individuals in our program areas. So we have programs like, you know, evangelism, racial reconciliation, creation care, healthcare chaplaincies, ecumenical and interreligious stuff. We've got a large staff that's dispersed around the country who like work on these on behalf of the denomination. I'm a project manager in addition to a lot of other duties as assigned, but there's no 2 days that are exactly alike. It's frequently taking ideas that our program staff have or people out in the field have and saying, okay, we can do this. Here's the kind of people we're going to need to work on this project. Here's a timeline. I mean, it's very boring in that sense. It's not boring, but it's like very routinized.
Sure.
The part of like sitting with the calendar and saying week 6 will accomplish this, week 7 will accomplish that. But the projects change constantly, and they range anywhere from, you know, we need like a handout card for this event we're going to, you know, we have a new presiding bishop coming in 9 months from now. So in November 2024, what all needs to be accomplished in order for that person to have the smoothest landing possible, while also like moving the current presiding bishop things where they need to be. I also have a web series that I work on based around a rule of life program that we've done. I run, it's called Sermons That Work, the least inspiring name for anything I've ever heard. But it's just a sermon program we offer for congregations that may not have a priest every Sunday. So a lay reader will get up and read them. We offer Bible studies with our seminarians and yeah, it's a lot.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's busy. It's busy,
but it also seems like, you know, you kind of want that. Like I, in my line of work too, like people say, well, what do you do on a daily basis? I said, no day is the same.
No,
and exactly. I actually love that.
Me too.
And I don't mind. I would like to say that my life is a little chaotic. My work life is a little chaotic, but I don't know anything different. And I think it's great because it makes things interesting and I don't know what's exactly going to be thrown at me. So I don't mind it at all.
Absolutely. I mean, it definitely causes gray hair and receding hairlines for sure. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And also like, I just remember during the early, like not even the early days of COVID, like after year one, it was just like, oh my God, like please get me back out there. Get me do anything like that is different than the last and just sitting in front of the computer.
Yeah, for sure.
Just so much of just like, overly routinized stuff.
For sure. So I know like you travel, you traveled a ton prior to COVID.
Yep.
And has that kind of come back for you lately or?
It's picking up a bit. This year I used to be 3 weeks a month I was on the road, which was a lot. I think the year before COVID I had 88 flights, which was just nuts. Not something I'm looking to restart.
No.
But no, I think this year I went to New York once, just to go back to the home office. I don't even remember where else. I was just on the road, Norfolk, Virginia, where we just filmed a concert for a major fundraising event we do. And then tomorrow I'm going to Louisville, Kentucky, because we'll have our big convention there this summer.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. And then
you're just like scoping out the
area. It out. We have a youth presence that'll be there doing a training. So we want to meet them and record some of that. It's a lot of media stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I noticed that. I remember your docuseries that you were doing.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Well, thank you.
Is that, you know,
season two, June.
Awesome. Yeah. Love it. So let's talk about that because in our business so much that, my partner Bucky has really talked about is doing video and these videos, everybody out there, they are so cool. Like I honestly mean that, like I watched the entire first season, like it's really cool. And like, I just really enjoyed it. So let's talk about
that
a
little bit,
because I'm really happy to hear season two's coming out.
Yeah. Here. Well, it's funny because this season, we released the first one probably in 2018, 2019, and we had been banking episodes. And now I'm like looking back, I've just seen the first cut of a couple episodes and I'm like, oh my God, I was training for a marathon during like this section. And then like a year later, we'd film the next episode. I was like, I was not training for a marathon during this season for sure. It's based on our presiding bishop offered up a rule of life, an opportunity for folks to write their own rule of life as a way to kind of get into the what and why of a spiritual life. You know, a lot of people, sometimes I'm among this, I guess routine is the theme here, but you get used to, okay, I go to church on Sunday. I go home. I do everything I normally do for 6 days. I go to church on Sunday, you know, and that's not a really well integrated Christian life. It's not a good life for anyone just to say, this is really important to me. That's why I do it for 1 hour.
You know,
what in your life is really important that you only do for 1 hour? I can't think of almost anything. So it's built around like this, 7 practices: turn, which is kind of, repentance from the things that draw us away from God. Learn, study of scripture, worship, attend, worship at least weekly, pray, have a strong prayer life, whatever that might look like. Turn, learn, pray, worship, bless. Share the good things that have been given to you with others. Go to be out in the community and participating in the life of the city where you are. And rest, which is like, that's a nice spiritual practice, I think, that I always forget.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like resting. I love sitting around. I love sitting around. It's one of my favorite things. But it's not like real recreative rest, like taking your mind off the things. And so for each of those practices, we release a single episode and we'll go somewhere in the church has pitched to us saying, you know, we have this amazing prayer ministry. We have a great, like for rest, we went to Jackson Hole. We have a little church there and we talked to the priest there for what ended up being hours about why it's so important to rest and what actual rest looks like.
Yeah, that was a great episode. The other one I really liked was the one where you went to that school.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was fantastic. Bishop Walker School in D.C.
That was fantastic.
Oh, those kids were so cool.
So, yeah, I mean, I just really love the video component. And I see you guys. I mean, you said it right in the very beginning of this, you know, 30 minutes ago when we started talking about, you know, you see the church as being a little bit more progressive. Mm. And that might not, that's not, it seems to me that's not only on like the, call it the religious side of things, but also on like marketing and other things as well.
God, we try. Yeah.
Because there's, I don't know, I know the church that I grew up in, I have no idea what our synod does.
Sure.
They don't do anything.
Right.
So it's like really cool to see that. And would you say that that's true, Chris? Like,
I think we're getting there. You know, we've always had, I don't know. It's weird because having grown up here, faith has been, and probably to some degree still is, like a very private thing.
Yeah.
When I went to evangelical school, I was like, what are you people doing? Like, it's ranging from the waving the hands during worship. I was like, huge pass on that. No shade to the people who do it. I was like, that's not me though. But yeah, I think we definitely, our presiding bishop really has set that in motion for us. It's always been a very private, you know, it mirrors the values of what was the upper class, which is, you know, this is something we go do on Sunday and that's it. And mercifully, I think we've left that behind. It doesn't serve anyone to be like overly private. It doesn't serve anyone to be like in people's faces harassing them either, but there's gotta be an in between somewhere. Sure. Yeah.
No, and I think that's great. And you know, what I've noticed is, you know, it does seem like just you as a person, like, you're very approachable.
Oh, thanks.
And if you're easy to talk to. And if, you know, the teachings of the Episcopalian Church is anything like you.
Oh, shucks.
You know, it's this seems like our super welcoming community.
Yeah, I mean, we try.
And progressive and looking for changes and how they can do things better. Mm-hmm. You know, reach out to people in various different ways other than just church. Because in my opinion, there's more to religion than just going to church.
You're absolutely right. I think one of our classmates from high school, Ryan Hemmer, I remember you said this. Yeah. So, and maybe he didn't come up with this, but I'm going to give him credit for it. He said, you know, if going to church on Sunday makes you a Christian, like being in a garage makes you a car. And I'm like, okay, like, yeah, there's just pieces of that that like I would probably dispute if I had a few beers in me, but I think that's ultimately true. It's ultimately true. You know, and thank you. That's so kind. I don't know. You feel a call to these things, in some way, and you try and build on them. You say, I want more of this. I want more of what I felt this one time. And so you just try to cultivate it the best you can. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And you obviously have a passion for it and you're just obviously very good about these things. And I think for people out there that are looking to just get into something, you have to have a passion for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to,
or have a calling, you know, in your
that could
right?
be. Yeah. And I really do think everyone, I'm like super Calvinist secretly, which is like, you know, everyone is actually called to something, whether we can acknowledge it, whether we understand it, whether we rightly do it or not. And sometimes that's your work and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's your hobby. Sometimes it's being a parent. Sometimes it could be anything. But yeah, I really think you find where you come alive, where you feel that spark. And yeah, once you find it, like, you don't ever want to let that go. And you know, I work too much, you know, there's balance in chasing down those things.
Yeah.
It can become obsessive, which is not ideal either, but
yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's something that we all have to, you know, be careful of in whatever you do. Right. And, you know, you talk about balance and things like that. And,
Tell me about where you find your spark.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy people and I know that's like really
it's
like
shocking.
It's just kind of like very broad, but I enjoy people. And I think I'm in the business of people and it's really interesting because this sounds kind of creepy, but like my wife and I have had these conversations several times because I kind of beat myself up sometimes about, I don't have any hobbies. And my wife said, Nick, your hobbies are people. And
I'm yeah,
like,
yeah.
God, you make me sound like a serial killer or something, right? Like,
it depends what you're doing to the people, I guess.
Over here or whatever, you know? It's just like, and it's like, but it's true. And that's because it's so much of my life, right? Like, I go to work every day and what do? I talk to people.
Yeah.
I talk to people. And to be in sales and things like that, you almost have to be a people person, you right? I mean, you have to. You have to be relatable, approachable. You know, for me, that's, I really enjoy that aspect. Sure, are there times where I'm like, oh my gosh, I get a phone call and I'm like, oh, of course. But like, for the most part, I just love people, and that's a passion of mine. And, you know, that could, I could do probably a lot of different things with that. But, you know, real estate for me has been just a really good fit in that aspect, because it's something that I do day in and day out, and talking with people and having conversations and doing things like this. It's just, it's something that I truly enjoy doing. So,
well, let me tell you, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but I'm really bad at transitions. And so moving around a lot, like, I really enjoy it, but it's always hard. And I especially hate not knowing what's coming. And so when I moved back to Rochester, now 6 years ago, I think, I went down to the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, and I was like, I didn't even know who lived in Rochester at this point. And I was just in a terrible mood, which I'm always in a terrible mood when I'm in those situations where I don't know what's coming next, thinking I'm going to move to Minneapolis. No clue what's happening with work. And I see Nick Pompeian from high school, and I was like, you know, like, I'm just not in the mood to like talk with high school people right now. I just need to like, and so I hide my face, and then what happens? But Nick Pompeian walks over and goes, Chris. And let me tell you, that made such a difference for the better in my life. So honest to God, it's hard to qualify or quantify what a difference that made in a place where I was in a mood to do anything but. So thank you. Well, but so I just want to affirm you. Yeah.
Thank you.
But I think so another thing I see and I hear, something I know about you, is that you care deeply about places too, which, you know, we're in our hometown.
Correct.
Tell me, if you don't mind me being an interviewer here for a second, tell me what you love about Rochester and the area surrounding.
Yeah. I mean, I love Rochester, and you do too. And we come back here because, you know, for me too, it was kind of like a calling. Now, yes, my father was in the real estate business, and that was a big thing, but this always just felt like home, Chris. Mm-hmm. I love the community. I loved growing up here. I never had the sense of, like a lot of people that live here, oh, I'm not going to ever move back. There's nothing to do. I never had that sense ever. Like, I'll be honest, I just didn't. I always felt very comfortable, very welcomed. I feel that this is a very inclusive community that really fosters and caters to families and just making people better citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And Rochester has given my family so much,
right,
that I wanted to come back and I want to make a difference. Now, I'm in a time in my life where I have two little kids. I have a wife. We're figuring like our lives out together as the Pompeian family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, giving back to the community maybe comes in different forms, but like, I'm committed to this place.
Right.
And I know that I want to create a legacy of hope and love, is what I told my wife when we got married. I want to create a legacy of hope and love for my wife and our family here in Rochester.
How about that?
And what does that look like? I don't know yet.
No,
but that's okay.
It's going to look different constantly, right?
We're on our journey to do that. So yeah, Rochester for me has just been this unbelievable place that has been a place of giving and just a lot of growth and opportunity. And like I said, it's just been super welcoming. It's home.
Yeah. And your family especially have been such gifts, I guess it's a pun with the gift of life stuff, but like you've been such gifts to people who are having the worst times of their lives, you know? And that is one of the things in this town that can be so weird.
Yep.
My coworker was telling another coworker who was coming to Rochester for something. It's so weird when you fly in, because when you fly into Rochester, it's like the line of wheelchairs is just like, it's unlike anywhere you've ever been.
Correct.
And then when you fly out of Rochester, it's doctors or clinic staff going everywhere else. And so it's just a strange place. But yeah, y'all have been so good to so many people who probably thank you, but also couldn't begin to repay that debt.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that my father set out to do, and we continue that on.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very great thing. And like I said, Rochester has been so good to us.
Yeah.
But I see that we're getting close.
Oh,
here.
Shoot.
So, but here's How the thing. Happen? We got to talk about this one thing that I will never forget. This it was when the Royals were about to get married. They had right?
just gotten married,
and mm-hmm. I was watching the news, and it was on. I think it was NBC News. I think it was mm-hmm. the nightly news, and they had a clip from TMZ, and I was watching, and all of a sudden I see Chris Sikkema with the bishop.
Yeah.
And I was just like floored. I was like, oh my God, Chris is like super famous.
Yeah. Well,
so I gotta understand like what in the world was going on? Like that was like hilarious.
Yeah. The story is I had just broken up with Taylor Swift. And she was writing a whole album about me. It's really embarrassing stuff.
It's coming out April 15th.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very moving. We're on better terms now. So, actually, the story behind that, it was so weird. But we were in D.C. This is about a week after Prince Harry and Meghan Markle got married.
Yep.
And, my boss, the presiding bishop, did the sermon at the royal wedding. And, you know, at the day of the wedding, I'm sitting in a... not even in Nashville, in a Hampton Inn off an exit in like Cool Springs, Tennessee, the least aptly named city in America. Neither cool nor springs. But we're like, my coworker and I were sitting there, and we're like, this whole like royal wedding thing, people are going to forget about it in a day. It's like so annoying that we have to spend all our time like working on this. And of course, things blew up in our world after that. And so we had an event planned a week later in Washington. One of those like candlelight vigil things that, you know, people are wont to do. But we realized after the fact, like, we got to get like security here. Like we couldn't find like security who would do this for a reasonable price. So we're walking through Lafayette Square after like, you know, delivering this, you know, Christian witness, and the news cameras are everywhere. And they're like, well, you're like a big guy, go like stand in front of him and make sure these reporters don't get to him, because like, what's he going to say? You know? They asked if he was going to run for president. He's like, what are you talking about? But yeah, I'm sitting there.
So you're like the bodyguard?
Oh, I was body manning the presiding bishop, which I pray like will never have to be done ever again for anyone. But yeah, it's me and like my colleague wearing like a full cassock. It's just like, this is the weirdest life. But yeah, we're like, TMZ, TMZ here. And it's like, why? But okay. But yeah, we ended up... The press was everywhere, and we had to duck into a hotel. We went into the, I think it was the Hay Adams, I can't remember, but into the basement bar, and there were these giant wingback chairs, and we positioned him so you couldn't see him when you walked in, and the rest of us just had to sit there, and they made us order a drink, so just sitting there with a, like, full beer, not daring to drink it, because we have to move it any second, and it was just surreal. Those were some weird days.
But, so there we have it. We have a pseudo-celeb here.
Pseudo?
Yeah, I mean, this is incredible. Hashtag celeb.
Yeah,
I mean, this
real is celeb, awesome. Real celeb. Hashtag this real awesome. Celeb.
Yeah, yeah, this is so cool. Like, I mean, like I said, I was just like, I was blown away. I will never forget that. And that's one of my...
It was surreal, man. I remember being like, well, I hope this is a first and a last. try to fly under the radar most days.
So as we finish up here, yeah. Chris, you know, this has been like really awesome. It's like, holy cow, we've already almost been at 45 minutes here.
It doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like it. And I'm glad it doesn't, because sure. it should be comfortable. This should be fun. And I think we've accomplish mm-hmm. that. Is there anything that you would like to just say to the people that are listening or people that are out there in regards to just, you know, figuring out life?
Oh, geez, right. Yeah.
I mean, let's have some words of wisdom from the guy that has
all figured out.
Yeah, you got it figured out. You know, you're a divine man.
Wow. Geez, keep it coming, man.
Yeah.
You know, I would dispute every one of those things, but I will tell you this. I don't know a lot of things. I don't know most things, in fact. But what I have found is two kind of platitudes that actually work. And one of them is the importance of place. Where, like, bloom where you're planted. You're going to have to go places that you never expected. You're going to have to do things you didn't want to do. And to the extent that it's in your court, have a positive attitude about it and be ready to attack the day. I had no plans to be back here, and you just find one thing after another that pulls you closer and closer in. And, you know, I get people say, what's holding you there? And it's like, nothing's holding me here. Like, I just, I really like it. And I've liked everywhere I've lived, but this place is special. And so whether you're listening to this here or elsewhere, find that place and really appreciate the people who are there, even when they make it difficult. And the second one is just, it's related to the first, which is say yes to things. It gets harder the older you get because you are established in different ways, but say yes, try the thing. And if you don't like it, you generally don't have to keep doing it. But the number of things that I did not want to say yes to that I had to or chose to in that moment, like that actually is what life was made of for me. Never been to New York before I moved there, never been to Tennessee before I moved there. And I would never give those experiences up for anything. They weren't perfect, I will tell you that. I left both of them, but they were extraordinary in so many ways.
That's amazing. Yep, we're all on a journey.
That's it. And God, I hate sounding like a gym class, like motivational poster, but they're right at least twice a day.
Yeah. That was very eloquently put. So, well, like I said, we're getting ready to finish up here. Chris, if there's anybody out there that wants to reach out, how do they get a hold of you? Also, just put a little spiel for the docuseries because it is really cool.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So how do we watch that?
I mean,
that
like,
too?
I am basically unfindable. I found social media, like, completely.
Hashtag celeb.
Hashtag celeb. Just search that. I should probably be on that. if you're interested in the Episcopal Church and the work that I do, my fingerprints all over the website. But EpiscopalChurch.org, the web series is called Traveling the Way of Love. It's really fun. June 2024, we'll drop the second season of it, and we'll go such places as my old stomping grounds in West Michigan. We'll go to the Appalachian Trail. We'll go to Paris, which is great.
Mr. Worldwide.
That's me. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, flying a not business class. What's that? Economy. Yeah. Worldwide. But yeah, or reach out to Nick. Nick knows how to put me in contact with people.
Yeah, I can do that too. Yeah. Well, once again, really appreciate this. Well, this is a long time coming. This has been really, really fun. And like I said, it's unique in the way that everybody's connected in a way.
Indeed.
And it doesn't matter what we do. We all face similar challenges and we go through similar things. And this was just like really cool because, like I said, we've never had a nonprofit, let alone someone from the church. Like, so thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for telling your story. Thank you for sharing what you do and having some words of wisdom and other fun stories.
Thanks.